I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Soon to be ported to the console you hear, it's VGC, a video game podcast with me, Pete Donaldson. I'm joined by Chris Scullion and Andy Robinson. This week, fanboys trembling at the gams at the thought of Xbox exclusives coming to other platforms. Nintendo could be handing over the keys to some new third-party developers, and Microsoft will seemingly have the big presentation of the earliest part of 2024. But first, how are we doing, folks? Chris, you recently did a bit of streaming for the first time in a long time on Twitch, and now they're letting go of 35% of the workforce. Do you have anything to say on the matter?
I'd just like to apologise to everyone concerned. Yeah, I listened to the podcast last week and heard your glowing, lovely words about my stream, which was totally unexpected. So that was nice.
That's all right.
Yeah, it was nice to see. I was coming out of an illness. I've been like, I'm not going to sound like I'm on my deathbed. You know what it's like when you've been looking forward to having like a holiday for ages and ages and ages and ages. Then the second the holiday starts, the whole family just gets sick for like 2 weeks. I was like, bastard. But yeah, it's all good.
Because you had your list of kind of AAA titles that you were going to bash through.
So I've done Mario and that's it.
Okie dokie. But that's mainly because your daughter was very interested in it, no?
Yeah. And she's like massively loves playing as Daisy now, which is like the biggest fear.
You've screwed it.
I've fucked it. I've messed it up. Yeah, that was like the big fear. For people don't know, I famously dislike that character for reasons I won't go into. But yeah, see, she loves Daisy now, so I'm just like, I'm not going to fight it. I don't want to ruin it.
Yeah. It's like when my sister tried to stop her daughters from like getting into the old Disney princess stuff. You just push them into their arms. You really do.
Oh, mate, my daughters kind of like they got a camera for Christmas and they're doing like, oh yeah, like and subscribe.
Yeah,
that's brutal.
Good stuff. Like,
makes me want to jump out of a window.
Good reminder, Andrew. Do like and subscribe to the VGC video game podcast. Andy, can we get an update on your 40-year-old Super Mario arcade machine after you put diesel in it instead of petrol?
Oh yeah, that was scary. For anyone who's ever imported a games console or anything,
Xbox One killed it immediately.
I killed my original Xbox. I had a US Xbox. And for people who don't know, obviously the US has got a lower voltage than Europe, and Japan's the same, lower voltage. So you have to buy like a special brick that takes the voltage down to stop our UK plugs from exploding it, basically. So yeah, I did that to my original Xbox. I accidentally plugged it into the wall and it blew up and wouldn't work again. Jesus. So this arcade, I've got like a Mario Brothers arcade machine, like a 1986 one. So obviously it's 40 years old and made of wood, and it's American. So I've got this big brick that's supposed to sort the voltage out.
Yeah.
But it's got two. So I rearranged my office. I moved my office across. So it's the first time I've unplugged it, and I plugged it back in. And it just went bang.
Oh,
I was like, what the hell? I was like, oh no, what was that? And I had a look at the box, and it's got two plug sockets on it. One's a step down and one's a step up. So it's like, how ridiculous is that? It's like putting the drown button on like your armbands, right?
No, like, because surely it's not like
just next to the accelerator on your car is the crash
pedal. No.
Yeah?
No,
why would you have it on there?
Well, because it's a button that kind of, I guess you would. The allegory would be, or the example rather would be, there's a button in your car that reverses the pedals. No, because sure,
you press reverse, it doesn't destroy the car.
Yeah, good point. Well, yeah.
So presumably, this is a catch-all device for in case an American imports a British thing, presumably.
Yeah, which that seems, there's clearly some niche market for that.
But, I bought one of those brick things once and I've used it like twice. I bought a Japanese 3DO and I was like terrified because like usually you can get away with it, but we're like, because there are a lot of companies now make new plugs that work for all kind of.
Yeah, that's the scary. You've opened a Pandora's box here. I can talk about step-downs for at least 20 minutes.
This thing, but I contacted a guy who I usually contact for like techie stuff, and he was like, better be safe than sorry, because it's like a laser thing, so the voltage will be, the wattage it uses will be higher. So I bought this. It must be like that size. It's like a big,
with a fan in it.
And you can see fans and big coil that you could probably run a concert using it. But yeah, so I've used my Japanese 3DO like three times.
What I like about this is that we were genuinely kind of concerned that we wouldn't have enough stuff, but we've done about 5 minutes on PSUs and stepped out.
I'm ready to keep going. One of the reasons that I was so like, I just nonchalant with just plugging it into step down is I've had step downs, you know, since I was 16, importing consoles and stuff, right? And I've never seen one with a step up on it, right? Yeah. I mean, I've got this television behind me, a Japanese television that's got a step down behind it. There's no like one, none of those sockets are going to make it explode.
How many step ups have you got running in your house right now?
Step
down rather. Quite a few.
Well, the one behind me is it's got like three sockets on it.
So, right. Okay.
So that handles more than a few devices, but. Luckily, I was so lucky. Like, I literally had to have a technician come around my house, right? A technician who handles, you know, kind of arcade machines.
Yeah.
And he looks like he was coming to like give you like a bad medical diagnosis or something. Like, he looks worried. We pulled all the machine out, and it was just a fuse had stopped it.
Oh, good.
And he's saying, "You're so lucky." Like, there's a little browned, burnt, scorched fuse that stopped, because he said, "If that fuse hadn't have stopped it, you could have had to replace the monitor, you know, the board." And keep in mind, this thing's 40 years old. But you're to Chris's point. Yeah, a lot of these the power supplies for consoles are external, and some of them are internal. So coming back to the top of the conversation, where I plugged my original Xbox in and exploded. The first console I ever imported was an N64, because back in those days, I mean, it'd be difficult for younger people to appreciate this, but it was atrocious, right? We were second class citizens as European consumers. Mm. Games came out months, sometimes years later. They were worse. They ran slower. They had big borders on them. I mean, I only recently heard Sonic the Hedgehog running like what it's supposed to sound like, right? It's incredible because we're used to hearing like it's in slow 60 motion.
50. Is it 60
like,
hertz?
It's mad. Hertz. Listen to what Sonic the Hedgehog theme sounds like, because in our brains, it's etched at like 30% slower.
It's much slower,
Because that's what they used to do. They just go, "Oh, just make it slower, stick some borders on, slap it out." So Perfect Dark, I was so excited for that. I don't know what age I was, probably like 12 or 13. And I begged my parents to... N64 was an old console then, so you could pick up a US one for like 50 quid or something. And so it was the first one I imported, and they'd like jerry-rigged some like step-down solution, but it was broken. Mm-hmm. So imagine how excited I'm, like a 12-year-old, like the most excited you've ever been for a game. And I had to sit and stare at this, because I couldn't play it because the plug had been buggered. So I had to sit and stare at the console with the cartridge, Perfect Dark cartridge in it, for like a week until they sent me a new plug to power it on. Years later, I found out I could have just plugged a UK plug in it, because that's the right. N64 has the brick comes out, right? So, you know, like some consoles have brick plugs. Well, that brick is doing all of the heavy lifting. So you can just plug a UK plug into it.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Well, there you
go. Anyway, that took up 15 minutes.
I was going to say, when the Wii first turned up at Fishing and Terror Magazine, we imported a Wii from Japan, even though it was out like 2 weeks earlier. We could have just waited. We had to go to Maplin and buy one of those big massive kind of converters, even though in reality we could have just bought a Wii travel adapter.
I seem to remember I was the first guy in that office to get a Wii.
But maybe it must have been
I made some good dollar in freelance from that. my Wii turned up and everyone was gathered around. It was like, and the editor of Fish Nintendo Magazine, like very hushly, was like, "Would you like to review Monkey Ball and Cooking Mama and, you know, load of third party tripe?"
Although before that, like a month before that, like they did a TV remote that looked exactly like the Wii remote. Like someone in Japan did some exclusive TV remote, and it was shaped exactly like the Wii remote. So we imported that so we could take photos for the magazine pretending we were holding the Wii remote, and it actually wasn't. It was complete bullshit. But it was the glory days. But yeah, there's a French company for anyone with retro gaming needs. I can't remember their name, but there's a French company now that makes modern plugs for retro consoles. So you can buy a single plug that powers a Mega Drive and a Mega CD and a 32X, which all had like separate power supplies. Or you can buy a UK plug for a Famicom with a disk system attached, and they're wired to work for like modern.
Surely, Chris,
step downs needed.
Surely, Chris, this is the kind of like the where we're going to end up when it comes to retro enthusiasm, so to speak. With obviously hi-fi enthusiasts, you've got like people who spend thousands of pounds on very specific copper cables and stuff, and you know the kind of the yardstick that every other kind of like HDMI thing is now the retro tink and stuff. Yeah. Will we get to a situation where people are buying like little ceramic circles to launch their kind of PSU wires off the grounds because you get a purer picture, a purer non-interlaced image on the screen and
I
stuff.
I hope not. I've already dropped £600 on a retro thing. I'm not upgrading again. That's me for life.
I remember a guy I remember a hi-fi enthusiast in Japan who basically got his own electricity substation in his garden because he didn't trust the dirty electricity that everyone else was sharing, so that his jazz music was pure. Anyway, let's get on with the show. An acclaimed Xbox game will go multi-platform this year. It is claimed. Microsoft is apparently bringing one of its more acclaimed first-party games to competing platforms this year. That's according to Nate the Hit, the podcast, and a show that often breaks stories involving the game industry, apparently. And Nate, hey, I didn't know this guy at all. Watched some of his podcasts on YouTube and realised it's the modern vintage gamer guy. He's one of us.
Oh yeah, he's awesome.
He talks about XCopy. he's an oldie. But the show did not name which title is allegedly coming to competing platforms, but noted it was in the Game of the Year conversation in the year it was released. So we don't know what it is. People are saying it's Hi-Fi Rush. Guys, any speculation? Any inside gossip?
I mean, the thing with Xbox is, with the greatest respect to them, there's not a lot of Game of the
Left.
Year contenders. So if it's not Hi-Fi Rush and it's not Forza Horizon, then there's not really a lot to go on.
Be Redfall?
Oof.
The critically acclaimed VGC Redfall.
Critics were involved.
I also saw, like, not to jump on your toes, people, like the second story, like someone, Jeff Grubb, was claiming that Sea of Thieves could be coming to PlayStation. Yeah. I think that's a separate thing, because certainly if Nate the Hate claims this was a game that was in the Game of the Year conversation when it came out, that Sea of Thieves certainly, although it's kind of well...
Loved it.
It's loved more now, but when it came out, it was pretty bare bones and kind of wasn't, certainly wasn't a Game of the Year in any Game of the Year conversation. So it feels like this is two separate stories, but with the same...
It certainly doesn't fit his description, right? But Sea of Thieves feels like a better fit.
Yeah.
All of Microsoft's big... online service games are multi-platform apart from Sea of Thieves, basically.
Yeah.
I mean, I know it acquired most or all of them, you know, Fallout 76 and Elder Scrolls Online and Minecraft. It makes sense that Sea of Thieves would be on everything. It's obviously on PC and Xbox. That's going to benefit the game and the players. There's more people playing it. You know, the community gets larger. They have more money to invest. Yeah.
Especially because Sea of Thieves was the first game that launched day one on Game Pass. That was like the first one where not everyone bought it like full price when it came out. If it comes to PlayStation, for example, that could be its first kind of opportunity to actually sell a lot of copies like at full price, unless they bring it to PS Plus or make it free.
Yeah,
to play or
I mean, the console war stuff is really a thing of the past. Like, you know, we're seeing, say, for example, Forbidden West is coming out for PC soon. It came out on PS5, 2 years ago? Sony have a clear cadence now of releasing their big exclusives a couple of years later. People don't even talk about it. That would have been such a big thing at launch when it was like, they were saying about how we believe in generations and, you know, we're making games exclusive that only work on our hardware. That feels like a million years ago, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Do you remember when like Ratchet and Clank couldn't be done on any other system and stuff like that? And now it's like running on a Steam Deck. you know, those days are coming to an end. It doesn't feel to me that if you're an Xbox consumer, like an owner, that it's much of an issue. If your big exclusive games are going to come out on other platforms like 2 years later, you're still the best place to play those. You're getting them first. You know, you're getting them for significantly less if you have a Game Pass subscription, which you can't get on other consoles currently. I don't see the issue. I mean, for Microsoft, it kind of makes sense that obviously it makes more sense for live service games, but something like Hi-Fi Rush, there was a lot of fans are speculating this could be referring to.
Needs audience, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. It was really well received. It's like a proper niche cult hit, basically. Mm. It doesn't seem to have exploded in terms of sales. But it was incredibly well received. Mm. It's a new IP, right, which makes it tricky. But you could see that if they put that on PlayStation, no PlayStation owner is going to consider getting an Xbox for Hi-Fi Rush.
No.
But if they've got Hi-Fi Rush 1 and that Hi-Fi Rush 2 comes out on Xbox first, maybe they will.
Yeah.
Mm. You know, there's a conversation there. But yeah, I mean, there's been a lot of reaction in the Xbox community about this, a lot of angry reaction at this suggestion that a game could go to another platform. And it's kind of like, I think a lot of those guys are showing their asses, to be honest.
Yeah.
It's not a sports team. And I've seen that terminology used. I have, like on Twitter, people saying to me, well, imagine if you let your star player, you know, play for another team every other week. You know, but it's fun. But this is not a sports team. It's a company.
Yeah.
It's somewhere you play your games. You're not like on the team. Oh, my team's losing. It's ridiculous.
It's embarrassing.
Xbox has been super clear about this as well, right? They put out a bloody advert with Nintendo that said, something to the effect of the more people play it, we'll win, right?
Mm.
They've been very clearly platform agnostic. They were the first people to start putting their stuff on PC day and date. Call of Duty is on everything. They've gone around and signed deals to put it on, go out the way. I mean, I know they had other motives there to please regulators and stuff, but they've been super, super clear. So it doesn't seem like the reaction to me matches what Microsoft has been saying. I mean, we've seen the headlines that PlayStation like outsold Xbox like 3 times plus last year in some territories. There's no growth in console for Microsoft, especially the growth they're talking about that they want on mobile and PC.
Mm-hmm.
If they want to get 100 million subs for Game Pass, that's when they're going to get them.
Mm. It bewilders me because, like I said, I've been off a couple of weeks. I've been, kind of been out the loop and I'm dipping in. I'm trying to avoid Twitter as much as I can while I've been off, and I dip in every now and then to see what the discourse is, go, all right, it's this now, and kind of quickly dip out again. But like when I sort of came on like earlier this week and saw everyone complaining about this, I'm like, did I miss something here? Because like they did it with both Ori games that are on Switch. The first Ori on Switch has Xbox achievements. And like they brought out Minecraft Dungeons and Minecraft Legends are on PlayStation and on Switch. It goes the other way as well. Although no one here in Europe gives a shit about baseball, the MLB The Show games, which are made in Sony's, I think, San Diego studio, are on Xbox and on Switch, mainly because MLB forced them to do it. This is the world we live in now, and it's like it blows my mind that some people still get really angry about it. This is the way it is now. I don't know if Microsoft.
I mean, it's significant in that I don't think they've released a exclusive single player game before on PlayStation.
Yeah,
they've released some stuff on Switch, which if you've got your paid up, you know, Xbox haircut dudes, they're not but worried about their games going on Switch. They're arguing with other people with PlayStation avatars on social media. You know, that's what I would say the issue with them. There's a lot of people saying, we feel like we've been misled. But I don't think that's, I mean, first of all, stop taking the word of a corporation as gospel. They're telling you what you want to hear. And secondly, I think Phil Spencer is one of the more transparent people in games. I don't think this is hugely out of kilter with what he has been saying.
Yeah, he's been saying for ages
that, look, the growth for us is on mobile, is on PC. You know, I imagine that the reason that more stuff isn't on PlayStation and Nintendo is because of PlayStation and Nintendo. I'd say if they went tomorrow, yeah, you can put Game Pass on there and we'll let you plug in all your achievements and stuff. I imagine they would slap stuff over because that's growth for them, right? Mm. The whole point of like Call of Duty, that is the worst scenario for PlayStation almost, with Call of Duty, you know, being still on their console, because it's now a giant advert for Game Pass.
Yeah.
All of those guys who play that game on time is like, yeah, are you bored of paying 70 quid every year for this thing? Well, you could just get it. If you were on the other console, and guess what, the other console might run it slightly better.
This is what people, like, if you're an Xbox fanboy listening, and you can apply this to other fanboys, if I'd like amend it however accordingly.
Celtic.
One hoops. If you're an Xbox fanboy listening to this, let me just explain this to you. You are not losing your games. I would understand if they're saying, but the next Halo is going to be PS5 exclusive, then yeah, I would understand being pissed off with it. I mean, man, I bought an Xbox or Halo and I'm not going to get the next one. You're not losing anything out of this. You're getting to keep all the games you were going to get. It's just that Microsoft are going to put them on other platforms to make more money to continue making games. If PlayStation is outselling...
To invest it in your platform.
Exactly. If PlayStation is outselling Xbox by multiple times, Xbox has to find other ways to make money. And if that means bringing their games to other consoles to keep the money rolling in so they can keep making games for your Xbox, then so be it. Just grit your teeth, accept the fact that other people are getting to enjoy the things that you enjoy. like the fact that someone with a PS5 is playing Hi-Fi Rush soon, hopefully, doesn't instantly make the game worse on Xbox or ruin your enjoyment of it. Just accept the fact that other people are being happy and just got on weird.
Yeah, as a football fan, and you know, Chris, you're obviously a fan of one of the big two up there, and like, there's no kind of like idea that the football team will be there, has been there for a long time before you were born, and will be there for centuries after you finish, hopefully. So like, it's kind of this lack of idea of permanence, and sort of going, don't worry about it. The more money Xbox makes, the more money Microsoft makes, you're going to have a better product. You're going to win. Yeah. Either way, AEW versus WWE, everyone's got their little kind of tribal affiliations, but there's just really no need. Just enjoy it. There's more
of it
out
there for
you.
It's such a selfish mentality. And I can understand that. I can understand to an extent some elements of fanboy culture, because not everyone is fortunate enough to be able to own both an Xbox and a PlayStation. Mm. I totally get that. So I understand when people get annoyed about exclusives. So Xbox fans saying, well, that's crap, we can't play Final.
Watch Chris Scullion playing them on Twitch. But
you get Xbox fans saying we can't play the Final Fantasy VII Remake. I get that. That's frustrating. Mm. But games being made multi-platform should never be an issue. Like, because then if you're annoyed that your Xbox game is coming to PlayStation or vice versa, that's just selfishness, because that's you being annoyed that someone else is getting to enjoy something because they didn't buy your console. You're getting annoyed that they get to enjoy it too. Like, get a grip. Let more people enjoy it.
Well, speaking of reaching out and, you know, lending your brothers a hand, Nintendo is reportedly considering outsourcing IP to more external studios. according to Chris Strang, friend of the show, and indeed, you know, co-host of the show, who claims the company is looking to find new partners for its next console, for Switch 2. I know that Nintendo is actively meeting with independent developers to find new partners and look at the studios that would work on some of its own IP. It's obviously very interesting. They work with Bandai Namco, Ninja, Mercury Steam, Wayfarer, Aggressor, Platinum, but they do want more studios in there. But like, working on Nintendo brands, I mean, Andy, you've worked with Andy and Chris, you've worked with Nintendo at various times. They're you know, I imagine there's a lot of emails flying around about style guides and, you know,
I've still got the Nintendo Switch official style guide somewhere. Yeah. From when I made trailers for Yooka-Laylee on Switch.
I heard just last week when you were talking about Pokemon Company being the worst for that. I wish I was on last week, because we had a big, massive list.
Was that when you changed the proportions.
No,
wasn't there one where this? Keep in mind, I'm saying that they went ballistic because you changed the proportions of the Pokemon. Yeah, oh, that one's supposed to be, you know, 2% higher than that one. Mm. Didn't you put a gun in one of their hands?
No. Thankfully that was the document we were given. They gave us the big kind of super massive the do's and don'ts of Pokemon, and that was one of them. Don't put a gun in a Pokemon's hand, and we kept threatening to do that from that point on as a joke. But it was like really specific stuff as well, and I was like, some of these are so specific that these have happened before.
So
there's obvious stuff like don't make Pikachu the same size as the big snake one.
Snorlax.
Snorlax, exactly. Don't do this, don't do that, don't change, don't make Pikachu red, etc. Then it was like, don't, for example, show a Munchlax brushing his teeth. I'm like, no one had that. No one was going to do that until all of a sudden, like, you've all decided that this is something that has to be listed as a thing. But yeah, it was an enormous document as to do's and don'ts and a lot of really specific examples. So which kind of then brought out that Pokemon toothbrushing game like years later. So that was kind of had to go back on.
Oh, mate, I auditioned for, I don't know if I've ever said this, I auditioned for Mario Rabbids, for the script writer. So I did tons of tests for that game. And one of the rules of writing for this, it was basically like, you can't break the fourth wall and no toilet humor. So I was coming from like Banjo Kazooie, like ukulele.
Yeah.
So that's exactly what I was going for.
And they're like,
you can't break the fourth wall and you can't do toilet humor. Like, you can only do that in the Mario RPG games. And I thought, well, that's what this is, though.
Yeah,
but anyway, then I played the game, and one of the first jokes is a statue of a rabbit on the toilet. It's like, oh, it's the captain's log. I was like, what?
Kicking a fourth wall.
You specifically told, yeah.
I can imagine someone writing a script for that and going, on page in level 3, the rabbit says, gah.
I just can't believe that when they choose to sort of do it, they do it so badly as well. That must be very annoying for people. Did you see, what's that big tech show that's happening at the moment?
CES.
Worst week of my life.
There's one of the booths that some kind of very, very kind of fringe developer has put together, like a proper wonky Super Mario.
I saw that.
AI in a really thick accent. It's really, really shoddy stuff.
That's incredible. That's a job losing thing. If we tried that at O&M to make an awful bootleg Mario. Pete, you must have heard of all the kind of WWE stuff like that they sometimes do, because we did a WWE game on as a cover once for O&M. It was like when they first brought WWE to the Wii, and there was loads of, it was awful. The game was awful, but because it was in the early days of the Wii, the gimmick was that you would move the remote in your front of your face to be John Cena and the DX crotch chops with the remote. And then, there's nothing more awkward than going, that was my first.
System seller.
That was my first trip to Japan. I went to Japan to Yuke's to see it. And it was really awkward just seeing like all the Japanese developers doing like constant DX crotch chops and going, ha, ha, and going, that's good. But then we put like, I think, Batista on the cover, and throughout the feature, we asked for artwork of the wrestlers just kind of standing looking mean. And again, they gave us like the untouched images of like the wrestlers,
right?
And like
back knee all over the place.
and massive like documentation saying you must remove all the acne. You must remove all the acne before it comes up.
Yeah.
And then it was the kind of list of don't show any screenshots of Triple H in a compromised position. Don't show anyone standing over Triple H with a steel chair, because to make him look like he's been beaten and all this kind of stuff. It's like an enormous list of do's and don'ts, which is like insane. But yeah,
they get that stuff wrong so often as well. It must be hard to sort of have a massive cash cow that's something that's going to, you know, keep the shareholders in villas for the rest of time. But like, it must be hard to sort of foresee. So bearing in mind nowadays where like IP is just so flexible and inflexible at various times, like, you know, people are, every social media, every TikTok, every YouTube, they're encouraged to play with people's characters and dick about. It must give you a proper headache.
Yeah. I think a lot of those rules and regulations for those big companies, it just comes from globalization, really. Mm. It's another reason that I'm really glad I went and did development for a bit to actually learn why things are how they are. Mm. And just trying to control, like even a small indie game, right? Just trying to control like how the game is shown and what it's done. You can understand why if you're Nintendo, you have giant rules and regulations for stuff like that, because yeah. it just makes your life easier. Mm-hmm. What it means is that you can push out all this material where you can announce a game and it's portrayed properly in every territory.
And when it goes wrong, you can literally sort of go, we told you not to do this.
Yeah.
Get rid of it instead
it's
of having
much,
a conversation
it's
where
much,
they're sort
it's
of
easier
going,
to do that. You put something out and it's done yeah. properly everywhere rather than, oh, this person's, you know, as kind of like discuss this inappropriately or whatever, mm. like it's not really our vision. So I do get it, and it mm. does make sense for those massive massive brands. That said, you've just reminded me, Chris, wasn't there a press trip where didn't one of our colleagues go on a press trip? I think he went to Japan for a WWE game, but like, you know, all the way to the end of the world, and then came back and they didn't have any screenshots, so they just couldn't put it in a magazine.
Yeah, that sounds familiar. that may have actually been me. I'm pretty sure from my memory, I need to go back. Like, I'm sure our feature just ended up being a tour of the studio and not actually showing much of the game for the first month, at least.
I can beat that. I can beat that. I was flown to Vancouver to see True Crime Hong Kong.
Right, okay. Oh, yeah.
Which was Sleeping Dogs. Remember Sleeping
yeah,
Dogs?
Yeah, yeah.
Because it became Sleeping Dogs. So I went there, covered it. I wrote previews for virtually every magazine at the company, official Xbox, official PlayStation, you know, PC Gamer. So all kind of print, and then they cancelled it before it went to print, because that was when it was Activision, and they cancelled it, and then Square Enix picked it up, and it became Sleeping Dogs.
The worst thing about, I don't know why I'm just in the mindset now of annoying shit that used to happen back in the day. like the worst thing about working on a Nintendo magazine during the Wii era was that when you would ask developers and PRs for screenshots, you would almost always get the 360 or PS3 version screenshots, and you would have yes. to get back in touch with them and say, We're reporting on the Wii version. Like
we need the Bacchini version.
Like. And then they would you'd have a couple of days waiting period then, because obviously they never made Wii screenshots. So they then had to go back to the studio and say, can you make us some Wii screenshots, please? And then invariably you'd get these 2160p screenshots that had been captured from the dev kits on the PC, and then you'd to go back to them and say, no, it needs to be 480p. Otherwise, that's clearly not a Wii screenshot. It's just an absolute nightmare having it go back and forth. And then you finally do get the 480p screenshot, and then you're like, oh, wait a minute. These look awful in a magazine. Because it's a 480p.
How did Nintendo succeed with the Wii in such an incredible way when the entire kind of vessel of multimedia coming out?
Because it was a revolution.
The crotch chops. well, crotch chops all around for January the 18th. Xbox and Bethesda Developer Direct event confirmed. For mid-January, they're going to be streaming a developer director presentation on Thursday, January the 18th, giving us an inside look at a selection of highly anticipated games coming to Xbox Series X, S, PC, and Game Pass. We got the Indiana Jones title in there, Obsidian's Avowed, Oxide Games' Ara, History Untold, and Ninja Theory's Senua's Saga at Hellblade 2. There's no updates on the Activision Blizzard games, unfortunately. Anything you're looking forward to, Chris?
I'm just delighted that Microsoft has decided to make it right in the middle of my first Thursday shift back. So I'm going to be the only person on that night. Just absolutely hammering it. So thanks, Microsoft. That's a nice kind of...
No, I'm going to make a point to go to the pub.
I know, I'm like, Andy, any chat you about? Fuck off, mate.
Andy, can you get some screenshots?
Exactly. I'm curious to see more of Indiana Jones. I'm curious to see how much they actually show of Indiana Jones. I've given up hoping that Hellblade 2 will have a release date. It would be nice, but I think if they were going to give it a release date, it would have been during the Game Awards. I don't see it happening a month later, but yeah, we'll see. Maybe they'll end with a big announcement that something's coming to PS5. That'll be out there.
Andy, any particular Indiana Jones games?
Indiana Jones is going to be... I don't think I've played an Indiana Jones game.
Not even The Fate of Atlantis. No, not even Last Crusade on the Locust.
We can go a week without Pete mentioning an old Amiga point and click game.
Another point and click. Flight of the Amazon Queen.
I don't think I watched Indiana Jones until I was a bit older.
Oh, really?
But this game is legit going to be nailed on excellent. I've said it before, so... the guy who's leading, who's I think he's lead designer on Indiana Jones, is a guy called Jens Andersen, and he directed, I don't know if you remember, the Starbreeze games, Chronicles of Riddick, Darkness, and he also, he's a massive massive Indiana Jones fan. He joined LucasArts probably about 10-15 years ago to work on an Indiana Jones game, like, you know, relocated, left Starbreeze to go there. And it ended up getting canned.
It's like the Indiana Jones of Indiana Jones games. He's looking for that special treat.
He worked on the BAFTA-winning Yoku's Island Express. That's how I knew him, because we were both at Team 17 was a publisher of both our games. But he's really super, super great game designer. And he's joined Machine Games specifically to work on Indiana Jones. That's positive. I've got massive, big, big faith in this game.
There was an Indiana Jones game on the N64. I think it was Indiana Jones and the Infernal Machine, but I can't remember if that was
Tomb Raider, wasn't it?
It was basically Tomb Raider, which is funny because Tomb Raider was Indiana Jones knockoff in the first place. It was basically a knockoff of a knockoff. It wasn't very good. Indiana Jones context.
Anything else you're anticipating? I mean, I guess most of this show every week is just like, there's a show coming up. And what do you reckon's on it? But is there anything that you're kind of jonesing for that you think might be
I'd like to see more Forza stuff. I recently did a video of the on my own wee crappy wee YouTube channel. I did like a video of my 10 favourite games from last year when I quickly realised I'd played nothing big from last year. And one of them was like Forza. And the point was I still really like Forza. I still jump into it every now and then for a race or two and then jump out again. But there's still nothing like meaty to it. Do you know what I mean? It's just a list of races and that's about it. And I'd love them to come out and say, okay, here's like a proper, a new mode for it or something.
I think it's just good. This show's going to seemingly lay out a pretty, you know, decent 2024 lineup for Xbox. I think all these games coming out this year, Hellblade, Avowed, Indiana Jones, that's a decent lineup in a year that needs it as well. So if you imagine that we get Switch 2 coming out this year as well, then suddenly it's shaping up to be pretty exciting.
Especially in a year where we're still not really knowing what is coming out from the Sony side of things. But there's really not a lot of known first party.
It looks like it's going to be a more quiet year for them.
So this is Microsoft's chance. They've got an open goal here. Like not that by the end of 2024 they're suddenly going to overtake PlayStation or anything like that. But this is their opportunity to finally put to bed all the Xbox has no games stuff like this. This is their year where they can say, okay, here are some
controversial.
Oh, here we go.
And I might get shot down by anyone, any of the business journalists.
Everyone on the forums, set your screen recorders now.
When was the last does anyone as an exclusive game ever actually changed? Like, how far back have we got to go? Because we sit here talking about, oh yeah, like they got some really good exclusive games that should help, you know, Xbox console sales. When was the last time any exclusive game had any meaningful effect?
It's more just
you've got to go back to the 90s, right?
It's more momentum these days, isn't it? It's got to be like, we've got this and we've got this and this and this and this and this and that. And it's got to, they've got to get,
I just,
to get
I honestly think going. Like I said earlier, like where people built their digital libraries, it's, I just don't see anything meaningfully. Yeah. That's why Microsoft, it was so important for them to get Call of Duty, because you only need something that big to swing the momentum, right?
Well, there's just nothing that big. I mean, if GTA 6 had been single platform, then yeah, that would have been, you need a game of that caliber these days to sell consoles. Like back in the day, you would have maybe got people buying a PlayStation for Final Fantasy in Japan, certainly, or something like that, or GTA 3. You would have bought a PS2 for that, or Vice City before they came to Xbox. But nowadays, nothing is that big that you would maybe Zelda, like Tears of the Kingdom, might have shifted some switches. Or,
well, of course. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. All right. So yeah, you've
but again
on Xbox and PlayStation.
Yeah. That, yeah. Switch is its own thing.
If you're going to include Nintendo in this argument, it kills it dead.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because they literally had their entire business. Yeah.
Certainly, in terms of Xbox and PlayStation, you're right. Like, as great as Spider-Man and Last of Us are, I don't see a lot of people buying. Maybe The Last of Us because of the TV show, but even then,
still, yeah.
You're not going to drop £400 on a console just to play.
It's been the case for a long time. But the strongest games lineup really doesn't seem to have much effect on best. Like Dreamcast was killed dead when PS2 came out, right? And PS2's launch lineup sucked.
Mm.
We're
not shooting down we look back now
with some nostalgia and go, oh, this is 7 out of 10. Yeah, they're 7 out of 10. But at a time, Dreamcast was like had an incredible lineup of games and PS2 killed it dead. I mean, that's like the perfect example of how it really doesn't matter. I mean, PS3 was a broken, horrible console that ended up, you know, matching 360 in the end with a worse lineup of games. So, and perhaps not. They're great. It's some great first party games, but it's. I don't know.
It's a weird one. It does seem to be a lot more about perception. And like you say, the whole jumping from generation to generation and retaining your library. Now, I think on paper, I don't know. I find myself playing the Xbox slightly more these days than the PlayStation. Just because of Game Pass and like in that side of things, I would imagine Xbox should be closer to PlayStation in terms of console sales. But like you were saying, like people,
I think the Xbox is a better console.
Yeah, I would.
Like, I think in terms of how everything runs, in terms of the UI, the services, I think it's a better console. Yeah. But
like you say,
first party games.
They lost the last
party lineup is on PlayStation.
And like you say, they lost the last generation. That was a crucial generation to not lose. Because of everyone carrying their digital libraries over, like you say, and like it's an enormous uphill kind of slog they've got ahead of them now.
Because I didn't account for that either. Because I thought that it was going to swing the other way. I really did. Because there were so many lapsed Xbox players out there.
Yeah.
How many players Xbox 360 players went to PS4? Right.
Yeah. And Sony have these.
Is there the opportunity to go back?
And Sony always have these ups and downs where, like everyone does, every manufacturer gets their ups and downs where they get a bit too cocky and a bit too big for the boots, and then they start making really odd decisions, like the Wii U, like Kinect, and like the kind of now we're at the stage where Sony's making some odd decisions because they get to the point where they think everyone will believe anything they say, so they bring out, here's PlayStation VR 2, it's the future. Oh, sorry, we stopped making stuff for it 20 seconds after it came out. And so like they start making, Sony are at the point where they're making odd decisions, but for some reason this generation it's not, the up and down isn't reflected in console sales. They're still doing well despite making some kind of odd decisions. And
well, I think a lot of that stuff is peripherals are massively profitable.
That's just one example though, but
PlayStation VR, it shouldn't even be called PlayStation VR. That's a Sony initiative.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been saying for the last year, this is very clearly a Sony initiative, not a PlayStation initiative. It's just got the most synergy that if you're Sony, if we were going to release a VR headset so that we have some basis in that technology, should it take off, what should we be doing with it? Probably making games. So that's what they've done. And now at CES this week, you've seen they've announced a headset, it's like a spatial AR thing, and it's basically a PlayStation VR with a different mandate. Yeah. So that technology is already kind of paying off in different areas.
But I mean, that's just one example. Like the PS Plus rebranding was a mess. I think
it's worked for them business wise.
But it was a shambles. Like a lot, it was so confusing at launch.
You say it's worked.
But this is what I'm saying, though. Like in previous generations, I don't necessarily think something like that would have worked. But for some reason, maybe it's because people are carried on from PS4 and jumped over and brought their libraries over, and they're less willing to jump back because they've got so much. They would be losing so much if they jumped to Xbox now. That a lot of kind of odd decisions are being kind of accepted almost. It's a weird generation for me. I think it seems like it's going to take something monumental to swing it back these days.
Agreed. Well, we'll take a short ad break. We'll be back with a little bit more Switch 2, Switch Pro chat. not from me. I'll probably talk about Simon the Sorcerer.
What a game. Voiced by Chris Barry.
Was it? he of the British Empire.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
We're back with the VGC video game podcast. Pete, Andy and Chris are with me. So as discussed in the first half of the show, Nintendo is apparently considering outsourcing its IP to more third-party studios. We asked, or rather Chris asked, the good people of the listenership, which developer and IP combination would you sign up? Give Animal Crossing to Concerned Ape, says Roscoe, fingerguns.net. Build a strong narrative that matches the game's perfect mechanics. Does Animal Crossing not have strong narrative, chaps?
No.
Just potter around, don't you?
There's like a million kind of preset random bantery bits, but you kind of quickly realise they don't actually have much. I would love to see an Animal Crossing. I'm going to bore a lot of people here. I'd love to see Animal Crossing do a Dreamlight Valley, because Dreamlight Valley contentiously or controversially does Animal Crossing better than Animal Crossing, I think, because it has an actual narrative and it has a plot running through it, and it does all the stuff Animal Crossing does, but then it's also got this enormous kind of storyline where you've got tasks and all. It gives a purpose to it. If you want that purpose, you can still just make your own house and do all the crap you can do in Animal Crossing if you want, or there's this sprawling, I've put like 100 hours in it and I'm still ticking off the tasks and all this kind of stuff. So I'd love to see an Animal Crossing with an actual narrative, because in the older games, the narrative started with Tom Nook saying, here, take a job, earn some money to buy your house. And once you get your house, it kind of stops at that point. And I was like, I was kind of hoping to do more, like have more stuff to do.
Tell us what to do, Nook.
Exactly. Like I don't have an imagination. tell me what to do and I'll do it.
Well, Gareth Clark on Twitter wants to take away IP from certain developers and give it away to someone else. I know people liked the way that WayForward worked on the Advance Wars remake, and I'd certainly love to see that series get a new entry. But could someone else do it? I really just liked WayForward's weirdly horny house art style. I remember that being. I think there was issues with the. With the technological prowess of that particular title, but that was quite well received, wasn't it?
I don't think it looked massively different, did it?
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't. I played that game for a stupid amount of hours. Stupid amount. Right. I reviewed it. I think it looked great. I don't think.
Right.
I can see that they have got a style.
Yeah.
Right. And it is the same in every game.
Mm-hmm.
If he's talking about Shantae, right? Okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
The character's like a belly dancer. So and you know, so there is a lot of flesh on show, etc. I can see how that someone might come up with that critique.
Their
art style is the same in every game, so I can see why that might become a bit dull. Yeah. But it looks on its own, it looks great. So Advance Wars looks great,
certainly Advance. But their token art style seemed to kind of fit well with Advance Wars. I think it was a million miles from what.
No, it was like really super like, super faithful. It's like a toy box
horny
kind of thing. It was
disgust.
Great.
Was it horny? Was it weirdly horny?
Unless you're turned on by tanks.
And who isn't?
Exactly. I can never get horny for a turn-based strategy game.
especially not that one. Like, they really needed to update the AI in that game. It's super, super, like Nintendo, whenever Nintendo does a remake, it's super faithful, like beat for beat, basically. So the AI is still like a Game Boy Advance AI. I played this game, right? I'm not exaggerating. I was stuck on one mission and I played it for a Shinkansen bullet train journey from Tokyo to Kyoto and back again. Same mission.
How it should be played. How it should be so played.
The same mission.
Listen, sometimes yeah. what?
So that's 5 hours plus. Sometimes. And the majority of that is just a standoff, right? Where you're clearly going to win. They've got one tank that's just going to, it's going to hold on for 5 hours while you slowly whittle away.
I think you'll find that's...
managed to finish two bentos.
I think you'll find that's
basically describing turn-based combat.
Because I think you'll actually find that's a fitting allegory from warfare in the modern day.
A man on a train, on a really, really quick train, just pressing button. Let's move on to Jason Milner. Give Sumo Digital the Donkey Kong IP and let them make a platformer in the style of Sackboy Adventures with all of the Kongs playable. Would you like all of the Kongs playable, Andy?
No, give it to Playtonic Games. Why'd you give it to those guys? The guys who made Donkey Kong Country are there.
Like, I don't trust Andy. Andy, I don't trust Playtonic because they stole your, was it your pig bios? Was it?
Oh,
it
was the bees.
The bees, the bee bios.
They don't listen buyers. To this.
They don't listen to this.
But the actual, because when we kind of did the obviously Ukulele, the Banjo Kazooie spiritual successor, and then we did the sequel that no one played. But it's incredible. It's a 2D platformer. There are more, even though we sold ourselves as like the Banjo team and the Donkey Kong team were the same team. Like they moved from Donkey Kong Country to Banjo Kazooie. But there's more Donkey Kong guys at Playtonic than there are Banjo guys. Like it's the vast majority, the guys who made the characters, the guys who made, programmed it. You know, they got, it's, I don't think it's the same designer because that would have been the Stampers and Greg Males. But there's some great designers there. The best Donkey Kong Country game of the last, 20 years, other than Tropical Freeze, is Ukulele. Yeah, Impossible Lair. It's brilliant. 100%. Those guys 100% should be given Donkey Kong.
There's nothing legally odd there, is there? Because Rare did Donkey Kong 64. I don't see any reason why they shouldn't be able to do another Donkey Kong game.
Who?
The Playtonic.
Well, obviously they're not Rare.
I know, but like obviously there's funny stuff with like Diddy Kong Racing and stuff because obviously Banjo and stuff around it, but... Like, I don't see any reason why there should be no reason why Microsoft should be in any way involved in Nintendo asking Playtonic to make.
Oh no, Donkey Kong's obviously Nintendo.
Yeah, it's
nothing to do with anyone else. Yeah. But
it just the seems best so
Donkey
obvious.
Kong games were made in Britain by these guys.
Yeah.
I mean, Tropical Freeze is amazing. I would say 50% of its amazingness is the fact that David Wise did the soundtrack. Who works on all the Donkey Kong Country games. But yeah, like I 100% I think they should be allowed to work on that.
It does seem a bit of a no-brainer. So
it's basically retro. This is the way Nintendo works, is they have, or a lot of Japanese game publishers, is that they'll have a custodian of each franchise, and it's like it's their thing. They're in charge.
Yeah.
They call the shots, right? So they'd be like Sakamoto will be in charge of like Metroid, and anything Metroid has to go through him. He has to be involved to have to do the final say. So I believe that Retro Studios are still quite hands-on. If anything happens with Donkey Kong, like it'll go through them. Yeah. If not, it's Miyamoto, but he's obviously busy these days. So I think they will be heavily involved in whatever happens with Donkey Kong next. And it does seem like there is some stuff happening because Nintendo these days don't do anything by surprise, right? They've got a theme park, Donkey Kong theme park. Donkey Kong was heavily involved in the Mario movie. And there's a rumor that they're going to do a Donkey Kong movie. So I think that makes a lot of sense.
Indeed. Yeah. Well, I think that's all we've got time for. We've filled everyone's hungry ears up with information about this and that, what should be done by other developers and what shouldn't be. And also we talked about power supplies for about 15 minutes. So
that's
I think
we all want.
That's VGC Video Game Podcast for this week. Do leave us a review. Do give us a screenshot of that review and send it to @JordanMidler on Twitter. Where is Jordan at the moment? Did I see America
Texas.
Somewhere?
Jordan is currently undergoing a legal procedure and strenuously denies all allegations. But either that or he's on a press trip.
He's getting his legs extended.
He didn't begin mind up. Yeah.
He's on his press trip to Austin, I believe. Is it Austin or is it somewhere in Texas?
Somewhere in Texas, yeah.
Yeah, but do screenshot a review of the VGC Video Game Podcast on Twitter. Send it on to Jordan on Twitter, and he'll randomly give someone a code. I'm not really sure what game it is. Prince of Persia: The Lost Crown review is imminent. I believe he's on that, isn't it? He's been writing that for a little while. Any early indications, Andy and Chris, about that particular
title? Well, the embargo's an hour after this podcast comes out, so you can
read
it on the website.
I will keep my powder dry on that one. Go head on over to the VGC videogameschronicle.com and send us your questions, comments and concerns to podcast@videogameschronicle.com. Thank you for listening to the show this week. You can follow myself at Pete Donaldson. You can find Andy_VGC and Scully at Scully 1888. As ever, thank you to Grant Kirkhope for the VGC podcast theme song. Say goodbye, Andy.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye, Chris.
Goodbye, Chris.
Thanks for writing most of the script for this show. I keep on having to change who's speaking. I've been Pete Donaldson, and we will be back next time. Farewell. Lure of the Temptress.
I don't have fun.
VGC, a video games podcast, is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.